time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Welcome to Abandoned Manitoba with our favourite local historical enthusiast, Gordon Goldsborough, who joins me now. Gordon, good morning.
Good morning, Nadia.
He joins us from the Manitoba Historical Society. And Gordon, remind us of the clue from last week.
Well, I said that back in the day when Sturgeon Road ran all the way from Portage Avenue to the Perimeter Highway, people driving along it might have noticed that on the west or the left side of the road was this large concrete forest. And I thought I would tell the story of what it is.
And I recommend that everyone goes online to see these pictures, because my homework, my preparation for this was to see the pictures, and it's very, very intriguing. So tell us what we're talking about.
It is. You know, people sometimes describe it as Winnipeg's Stonehenge.
Yes, that's the first thing that I thought too.
Yeah. You look at it, and what it consists of is a series of large mounds. And by large, I mean pretty large. They're about 70 feet in diameter, two of them, and then there's two of them that are about 50 feet in diameter. But what's really arresting is that protruding out of the middles of these big mounds are concrete pillars, lots of them. And they stick out of the ground. Well, the mounds themselves are at least 8 feet high. And then these pillars stick out of the out of that probably at least another 4 or 5, 6 feet sometimes, varying lengths. It's really kind of surreal looking, quite unusual.
So it's not Stonehenge, is that what you're telling me?
Well, as far as I know, it's not old enough to be Stonehenge.
Then what is it?
Well, I remember as a kid driving by there with my parents and my dad telling me, oh, that he thinks is a place where they test these piles. That's what they are. They're concrete piles used to support buildings, and they test them there to see if they'll stand up to weather conditions. And that's what he told me they were. Well, I took that on faith. My dad had told me that. It must be true. Well, over the years, people have pointed it out to me various times. They've asked me what it is, and I tell them, well, my dad told me way back when what it was. It's only recently that I've began to wonder if perhaps there was anything more to the story, because oftentimes when, you know, you hear a story, it turns out that there's either elements that are not quite right, or in some cases, the whole story is just plain wrong.
So how close was your dad?
Not at all.
Just plain wrong. Just sorry, plain Mr. Wrong. Goldsborough Sr.
Yes, unfortunately. So I had to do some digging. Now, incidentally, you can't go up the Sturgeon Road anymore because the Centreport development has kind of interrupted it. So today, if you wanted to see it, the best place probably is if you go to the Prairie Dog train. From the station, you can see it. It's just a short distance away. In fact, I was told the other day by people at the Prairie Dog that people routinely ask about it. So I thought, hey, here's an opportunity to find out what it is for once and for all, and try to set the record straight.
Great. And our director, Bruce, has such an apt description for this. He says it looks like four concrete pincushions.
That's
which
exactly.
I think is spot on.
That's
so yes.
Right. That's exactly. Yeah. So this maybe I should set the backstory for where this whole thing begins. 1961, four brothers here in Winnipeg, the Simpkin brothers, get together and form a large company. They bring together apparently 31 individual companies, and they form something called BACM Limited. BACM stands for British American Construction and Materials Limited. Basically, it's a big corporation related to the construction industry, and there were three facets to their building, to their business. They did construction, and by construction, I mean heavy construction. They build big things. So, for example, they were one of the contractors of the Red River Floodway. They have built a number of airports. They built hydro dams in northern Manitoba, in Alberta, British Columbia. They were involved in the Athabasca tar sands. So, you know, they're building big, big projects. In addition to that, they're involved in land development. But perhaps what is most germane to our story here today is that a facet of their business is in building supplies, and particularly things made out of concrete. So they make things like girders and beams out of concrete. They make piles. Of course, there's the piles connection to our story. They make sewer pipe. They make basically individual tubes that you can then link together one after another to make a long pipe. And they make ready-mix concrete. So this is their business. And of course, one of the major ingredients they need for that business is cement. Now, listeners may put the two terms together, cement, concrete, same thing. Well, they're not quite the same thing, actually. Cement is the adhesive that glues everything together. Three ingredients in concrete. One is cement, that's the glue, gravel, and water. You put those three things together, you mix it all up, and you get concrete. So when people say, oh, look at the cement sidewalks. No, technically not right. It's the concrete sidewalks. And BACM got all of its cement from the one facility here in Manitoba that made cement. That was a company called Canada Cement. They had a big plant down in what we call Fort White today. The plant is still there. It's not working anymore, but it's still there. And that's where they got all their cement. Well, they say they started in 61. Late 63, they announced that they're going to build an $8 million plant to make their own cement. Now, I guess I can understand the rationale there, that rather than being dependent on another company, I suppose by making it themselves, they can achieve lower prices, perhaps. And so the idea was they were going to go up into the Interlake, they were going to quarry limestone at Steep Rock and at Lily Bay. They were going to come back to the site somewhere in Winnipeg where they could get clay. And there's a number of places in the Winnipeg area you can get clay. And they were going to use that to actually manufacture the cement they needed. So they announced in early 63 they were going to build an $8 million plant to manufacture cement. Now, that in itself would be significant. But what's even more significant is that literally a month before they made their announcement, another company had actually announced almost exactly the same thing. A company called Inland Cement said, we're going to build a cement plant in Winnipeg. Coincidentally, an $8 million plant. They hadn't chosen a site yet, but he said somewhere in the greater Winnipeg area. So now you have three potential players where you only had one before. So you have the original one, the monopoly one that was Canada Cement. You had this new party, BACM. And then you had this Inland Cement. They had plants elsewhere. They had one in Regina, for example, but they were new to the Winnipeg market. And they were all going to build these big plants. Well, in fact, Canada Cement, the original one, they had just made a big upgrade to their plant. So, you know, I read this and I went, this doesn't sound like it makes a lot of sense. How could there be enough business for one plant to suddenly have three plants? And I thought, So I kept reading, and sure enough, shortly after that, I found references to reports by industry analysts and said, this is crazy to have three plants. We'll actually be making triple the amount of cement that the entire construction industry in Manitoba needs. We do not need three plants. So reporters interviewed the three companies, and of course the original one, Canada, said, well, hey, we were in the business long ago, and you know, we've just upgraded our plant. We could fulfill the whole market by ourselves. The other two companies that hadn't yet built anything both said, hey, we think we can do a business here, so we're not backing down. So I liken it to sort of a big game of corporate chicken. You know, chicken is where, you know, you get two people or two, you know, driving at each other with cars, and then you hopefully one of them will swerve at the last minute, you know, is chicken. Well, I think that's what this is. It was a big game of brinksmanship that these three companies were all sort of lobbying to see what they could do for the concrete industry. And of course, the whole point was to increase competition and drive down pricing. At least from BACM's perspective, that probably made a lot of sense because then they could make their products more cheaply. So in late 1963, BACM purchased a property, this property we're talking about. Now, it turns out it's actually not in Winnipeg. It's actually just outside of Winnipeg in the rural municipality of Rosser. It's just off of the CP main line, and it's a place that was well served. There was a railway running right through it. They started driving the piles, probably resulting in these pincushions that we have today. And they were preparing that they were going to have the plant ready by the spring of 1965. So everything seemed to be going, they got gangbusters. And then in the early part of 1964, an announcement was made by Inland Cement. That's the one with the plant in Regina. And they said they have bought the assets of BACM's plant in Winnipeg. In other words, it sounds like they basically paid off BACM to just back away. You don't come into this market. We will, you know, take over here, and we'll pay you enough that it makes it worth your while. So it appears that the all work stopped at this point and never resumed. So there's the story of those plants. Basically, it was the result of competition between three big cement plants. Now, it turns out Inland eventually did build a plant. They had said they were going to. They actually did build one in Winnipeg. It's actually just along Keniston Boulevard, just south of the IKEA. And it was built in the 1960s. It operated until the early 1990s, and it is now standing abandoned too. In fact, there's the interesting part of this whole story. At one time, we may have had as many as three plants, and now we have none. Mm-hmm. All of our cement actually comes from Edmonton. So the industry has changed dramatically. But what's interesting, I think, particularly is the story of these mounds, because, you know, people have always speculated that maybe it's caused by the freezing and thawing. Winnipeg, of course, has a cold winter, and the freezing and thawing of the ground may have caused them to buckle upwards. And talking to my engineering friends, they say, nope, they don't think that's the case. They think probably either they were simply raising the surface in which to drill these piles because they wanted to put machinery on top of it somehow, or that they in fact eventually planned to make the whole level of the site up to that level. So they think it was always designed to be that level and it wasn't pushed up that way.
Now, where can people go to see these pictures? Because what's so interesting about it is how there are so many piles kind of squished into such a small area.
That's right. And it's in nice, neat rows, like a big grid.
Yeah.
When I was there not long ago, I sent my drone up in the air and then put its camera pointing straight down so you can see the patterns. And from the ground, it looks like sort of a haphazard arrangement. They're not in any particular pattern. But from the air, you can see very definitely they're in nice, neat rows.
Where can people see those photos?
Go to the MHS website, mhs.ca. And there's a link along the left-hand side that says Abandoned Sites of Manitoba, and you'll see pictures there.
I love the concrete drama that was involved in all of this. Bruce mm-hmm. wants to know if Jimmy Hoffa was involved in any of that. So, Gordon, thank you so much. Tell us what's the clue for next week.
Well, next week we're going to do something just a little different. Listeners may be aware that over the last few months, we've been hearing quite a lot about wooden grain elevators. You know, a group of seniors that painted one at Inglis, for example. There's a group at Tyndall that is attempting to save the elevator there. There's one coming up in the next few weeks that may be demolished. And so next week, I'm going to describe a project of the MHS we've been doing for a few years called This Old Elevator, where we've been trying to document the experience of this once abundant prairie symbol.
Once abundant, now abandoned. Thank you, Gordon, so much.
You're welcome, Nadja.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.